You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this interview, I am going to introduce you to Sarah Racashano. We talk about her deciding to leave a career after 20 plus years. It's a pretty interesting story, I got to admit. Now, I've been really fortunate and I've been lucky enough to have many conversations with people about why they change careers. What fascinates me about this is while each of these stories is different, each of the people is different, there are differences and then there are also sometimes a few common themes. In Sarah's story, it turns out that she actually had a very clear vision, even as a child, of what she wanted, the job she wanted, and the life she wanted as an adult. And she made it happen. And honestly, she says that she loved it until she didn't. And then she was in a spot where she needed to make a choice. Here's something I'd love for you to think about as we start the interview, as I get ready for it. Her career was in finance, investment banking. So now I want you to think to yourself, what do you think that she shifted to? You haven't heard the story yet, so you don't know. So just make a guess and hold on to that while you hear her story. I think that'll be fun. Oh, and there's also a point in this conversation where I give her the very Floridian and totally ridiculous, I know it's ridiculous, I do, explanation of how alligators are really not actually that big of a deal. I know, it's very silly, only happens in Florida. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do it. Sarah Racashano, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am, Amy.
Yay. Oh, you're welcome. I'm happy you're here. I start every interview asking all of my new friends what part of the world they call home. Where are you located?
I am in Connecticut, the Nutmeg State, East Coast. I was in New York City and I had just left after living there for over 20 years. And now I'm back in Connecticut in the sticks.
Connecticut. All right. Very good. I'm having a New England Northeast sort of bubble in my guests, which it always fascinates me because I don't set it up like everybody picks their own time on the schedule, right? But the past two guests were in Massachusetts. You're in Connecticut. It's something in the water. All right. In a second, we're going to move to the topic of the day. But to get to know you just a little tiny bit better, share with me and the audience something about you, something you do that you consider like self-care, something that's not really related to work or family.
Well, being a New Englander, I drink my Dunkin' Donuts, so that's self-care right there.
I love it. Okay, yes, that's absolutely a New England
extra
thing.
Large, half decaf almond milk. Go
that
Dunks.
Is absolutely, I think of that as like a Boston thing. Like, so
it's New England.
Definitely New England. So that's
very
good.
I love my Dunks.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of self-care, though, every day in the morning, I go on my spirit walk. I wake up and I welcome the day. So I sometimes take my Native American drum and I'll walk up, connect with, the plants and the blue sky and the birds. And sometimes a bear crossed my path one time, which is pretty cool. It was bobcats. Very different from New York City, the concrete jungle. Now I'm here connecting with nature and it's wonderful. So I'll do that in the morning and then I'll say some of my chants with my drum and then I welcome the day.
Very nice. Very nice. We used to have a family house up in the Berkshire Mountains and we would go to the Natural History Museum and we with the little kids and there was an exhibit of like the animals that live in the area. And one of them is the black bear. And my mother, this is 20 years ago, my mother looked at the exhibit of the black bear and was like, we've never seen a bear while in all the years we've had the house here. And then we went home and within 48 hours, a bear walked across the yard. It was the wildest thing. It was the wildest thing. Apparently, it was they come out when the berries and things like that are not on. They're looking for food. They're looking for food. But it was just crazy. She was like, never seen one. And then it was like, boom, here's your bear. Here's your bear.
Bazinga. Yeah.
Bazinga.
I have a friend who I grew up with here in Connecticut who's now down in Jacksonville. And yesterday we were watching that clip of that guy barefoot wrestling an alligator along the highway. And I texted him and he's like, yep, I got alligators in my backyard. And I'm like, oh my God, we got bears, you got the gators. Like,
right.
this is crazy.
We don't have them. We don't have them. I'm in Miami and we don't have them like in our backyard, but they're in absolutely canals. We know. And then we have in Miami, we have both gators and crocodiles, saltwater crocodiles. And so, and we kind of know where they are. They keep track of, they try and keep track of the crocodiles, and they tend to be territorial, but because they get attention, they get attention. But the craziest thing about being in South Florida is that the Cayman alligator, the like, is considered docile. Like, it's not really a threat to full size adults. You can kind of, what, they just ignore you. They ignore you. Not small animals, not small people, and definitely not in the water. But like, you can, like, if you, they're just not interested in a full size human being. But I will tell you, as a transplant, the first time I came close to one, I did not want to. I was like, no, I don't. But you can tell me that as many times as you want. I am not gonna listen to that. And if I did come into contact with one while I was swimming in the water, I would levitate out of the water like a cartoon. I would just be like,
No, thank you. Yeah,
but they,
I'm a big scuba diver, and I've come across tiger sharks very
yep.
close, and great white sharks I've seen from the cage. Lots of fearsome, sea creatures underwater that one would think are scary. I'm not worried about those, but if I can't face with a crocodile, no, thank you. I don't want to change my tune about sharks.
People who grow up around them are very chill. I mean, they do, like, they're very chill, much more chill than I am. I'm much more chill than I was 30 years ago when I moved here, but there's a whole different level of chill that goes with that. But that was a funny video because he's like barefoot. He's like, here I am to get the giant animal that weighs like 200 pounds with the, yes. No, I did. I also saw that. I also saw that. Okay.
The New York Post got it. I sent to my friend who I texted. I was like, isn't he worried about little alligator nips to the toes? And he goes, alligators don't have little nips. I'm like,
I don't think they do either.
oh,
They
just
do,
little nips.
every once in a while, they'll do something like where they do a necropsy on like an alligator for whatever reason, like something crazy has happened. And the stuff in their belly is like wild. It's like, license plates and just not even like they eat some crazy things. So, but all right, the topic of the day is actually not strange things that alligators do in Florida or bizarre behavior by Florida man, although it would be a fun talk. The topic of the day, we're going to talk about when you walked away from your 20 plus year career. Would you like to talk about that today?
Absolutely. But like Alligator Man, I'm also barefoot these days. So I think we have something in common.
There you go. All right. So I want to back up before we talk about walking away from your career. I want to like way up and talk about like the start of that career, like, and who you are as a person. If I had met you when you were 15 years old, what were your dreams then? What did you want to do with your life? So if I had met 15-year-old Sarah and said, "Hey, what do you want to do when you grow up?" What would you have said?
Work on Wall Street.
Yeah, work on Wall Street. How did you know, like, what, how did you know about, well, I'm trying to think if I knew, I mean, I actually grew up in New York City, and so I knew about Wall Street, but I don't know if I knew what it was when I was 15. How did you know, what gave you that incentive to do that?
Well, my mom and dad are from Brooklyn, and
Okay.
they moved to Connecticut before I was born in the late 70s. And so we were, the country bumpkins compared to all the city cousins in Brooklyn. And so when we'd go to the city, through Grand Central Station, take the train in, and seeing sidewalks and pizza delivery and everything was like bright lights, big city for us. And my mom used to work in Wall Street in the 70s, and my dad was an engineer. So for me, I thought that, math and science was the way to go, and
Yeah.
to kind of combine that with an MBA like my father did in the 70s. And so I thought that was a nice combination to, seek job security, right? You have quantitative skill set and you have, the finance MBA to round it out, and you can write your ticket. And mind you, I'm a child of the 80s, so Gordon Gekko, Greed is
You grew
Good,
up,
that was kind of a
yes.
thing right back then, right? Like you wanted
Yep.
to be that woman with the suitcase and the, or sorry, the briefcase and the suit and the sneakers and going to work,
The
right, with the
power
boys.
suit, right? What is the line from that movie with Gordon Gekko? Blue,
Greed
buy
is
Blue
good.
Star. Yeah, greed is
Oh.
good, but then what he's like, buy Blue Star or all in on Blue Star. There's a lot of, that is a great movie. That is a really fun movie. All right. So what did your mom was on in finance on Wall Street. What did she do? Was she a broker?
Well, back then, she was an administrative assistant for the executive suite. So when we were reading, was it Barbarians at the Gate,
Yeah.
right about the takeover of RJR Nabisco, I believe, in the 70s. It was Henry Kravitz of KKR and others. My brother and I are both in finance, and we were thumbing through that book, and she looked at a photo of one of the people. She goes, "I remember that guy. He used to walk around with a cigar." And then she worked at Sandy Weill, who then became the CEO of Citigroup,
Yeah,
who
that's a
I
big
met
name.
on campus when he was recruiting up where I went to college undergrad. But she was working with him, and her claim to fame was he slammed her finger in a coffee machine because she was making coffees and he was trying to, like, I guess, cut in, and she like said no, and he like slammed it down by accident. So I told him that when I met him on campus. Not that he remembers, but
Hey,
yeah, so she was
did he
making,
pretend to remember?
I don't know. I think he
You
was
don't
just like,
remember. Okay.
what? You're a sophomore in college. What are you talking
So, all right. So, you knew from a
about?
young age that you wanted to go into finance to work on Wall Street. And you studied, so you went to school and studied math and science and went all the way through
Engineering.
engineering. What type of engineering? Or just was it like,
I was operations research industrial engineering. So what that is problem solving engineering. It teaches, it's kind of like a general sort of focus, but you focus specifically on optimization and efficiency, but you have like a blend of different math, science, calculus,
yeah.
computer programming. And then they
Did you
gave you a
love
lot of
it?
business. I loved it. It was very hard. I mean, engineering where I went to school was extremely challenging, but I made it through. And that's one of my life perseverance stories of like, feeling as if I was about to fail out, and I managed to succeed. So I did it.
Very good. And then did you go on and get the MBA?
Yes, I got my MBA part-time while I was working full-time as an investment banker in New York
Okay.
City. It was exhausting, but I did it. And then once I got the degree, it was 2008. August, and then the world came crashing down in September with
Yes.
Lehman.
Yeah, that was right. So you graduate with an engineering degree and you want to go work in finance, which actually is not a non-traditional path. Like, and there are plenty of people who go from engineering into finance.
They all go into hedge funds because they're all like programmers.
Okay, there you go. So how did you land a job? You take your shiny engineering degree and your family pedigree, and you hit the pay, send your resume to all the big firms on Wall Street. And what job did you want?
Investment banking, and I got it, but I got it the backdoor route, meaning that I was a student, a senior on campus when 9/11 hit.
Okay.
So obviously 2000 was an era where there was already dot-com bubble burst, so there
Yep.
was a recession and issues there. So that combined with the towers coming down, was a one-two punch back then, in terms of job searching and graduating and feeling as if there's nothing out there. And the class ahead of me, a lot of them had their job offers rescinded.
Right.
So for me, I took whatever I could right out of the gate at graduation. My GPA wasn't great, so I started at Unilever, actually, the consumer products company, and the
Okay.
competition to Procter and Gamble. And I focused a lot on supply chain finance, Q-tips. That's when we launched Axe body deodorant back then in 2002.
Really?
And then
Middle
Dove,
school
all
boys everywhere
that.
are thankful for that invention.
Stunk. The whole place stunk. I mean, we got, because it was a European product, and then we just brought it over to the States. So that was the big launch in 2002, and I was there.
That is
And then
very cool.
I ended up applying to a job at UBS in 2004. And what it was a marketing analyst position in the financial institutions group. So we covered the financial institutions, the five pillars. They were the asset managers, the banks, the insurance companies, financial technology, and specialty finance. And then eventually I made my way to actually being a true banking analyst, and then I made my way up to director.
Very, that's quite the climb. That's quite the climb. And there's a lot in there. Like, it was a long time ago, but yeah, 9/11 decimated the job market on Wall Street, in a lot of ways, including the fact that there were a lot of the offices no longer existed. People were moving their offices temporarily to New Jersey and Brooklyn and all over the place. And it was a really, really tough time to be in that whole area. So very clever. So you went through Unilever and then you get a job with UBS. You work your way up. You speak. So it sounds like you loved it. Did you enjoy it?
I really did. I really did. As in my 20s, I'm presenting to boards of director members, and C-suite, decision makers at our clients. I mean, our big clients were BlackRock, Eaton Vance, PIMCO, these sort of decision makers, portfolio managers, you name it. And all in all, that time at UBS, I closed $5 billion of deals in total. So that was pretty awesome for me being in my 20s. And we were the premier FIG team on the street in 2002, 2006. Our banks team closed a $101 billion M&A deal. That was ABN
Wow.
AMRO. Yeah, it was real awesome. So it was like cream of the crop in terms of like my colleagues and the various senior leaders and really what we were kind of in. It was kind of like the heyday, sort of like Gordon Gekko in the
Yeah.
height of the 80s. And then everything came crashing down in 2008. We were financial institutions, so our clients were like the first line of defense when those markets kind of really soured seriously. I mean, it was everything. It was the equity markets, it was the debt markets, it was short term overnight LIBOR was going crazy. And it was interesting because you had all these senior people throughout the globe who are veterans in the banking space, and nobody knew what to do then. And it was just
Yeah.
such an interesting time. But here we are advising our clientele, the FIG, the financial institutions, in a very unique way. So luckily, I was able to weather the storm and not get laid off. But 2012, I did get laid off, and then that became kind of the next, I guess, vintage of my story and my career. But all the while, I always wanted to work in renewable energy, so I was able to make that segue transition in 2011, right before I got laid off in 2012.
All right, so you were in investment banking, which the investment banking life cycle is really very, very front loaded. Like it's super intense, and people go into it, and the idea is that you're like in, you work like an absolute maniac, 10 p.m. meetings, stuff like that, right? Open with the bond market at 7 o'clock, 10 p.m. meeting with other things. You do that for a certain amount of time, and then in theory, if you do things right as an investment banker, you cash out after 15 years, and you're able to like be king of the world. But so it doesn't work like that as much anymore because the markets are too topsy-turvy. So you want to move to renewables, but you're still on the investment banking side. And then you get laid off in 2012. Is this when you make, is this, so is that the 20-year mark, or do you stay in investment banking at that point?
No. So when I was a freshman in college, I wanted to be in renewable energy, but
Okay.
I kind of it just wasn't a thing.
It
Even in
wasn't quite
2000,
robust enough to be
mm-mm.
on, yeah.
Even 2011, it wasn't a thing. So one, I got my MBA. 2008 was when I got the degree. I wanted to use that as a transition to start to like talk to venture capital firms and like real early stage startups. I mean, Tesla didn't even launch the Roadster at that point, which is very
Okay,
interesting.
yeah.
Yeah, and even the EIA had projection of various power fuel sources like coal as opposed to solar and wind. Wind and solar was like basically at 0.1% throughout the next 30-year projection. So the world was a very different place in 2006 to 2008. But I was able to make an internal, I guess, shift from FIG to the utilities group at UBS,
Okay.
and within was the renewable energy team. So that's when I was walking away from those transactions in the financial institution space, and then really starting to talk about like first and second generation
Right.
biofuels and ethanol and other sort of large scale power production opportunities for IPOs and capital raising. So, but yeah, at 2011 is when I shifted, but then the end of 2012 is when UBS went through some serious financial issues, and there was five rounds of layoffs, and I got hit right around Hurricane Sandy when New York was hit with a hurricane. So it was a
Oh.
1-2 punch yet again. First time
Don't
shown the door.
forget. Those are not fun to live through, the rounds of layoffs where you like it's moving through an office and you know that it's happening and no one is talking about, no one can, I mean, everybody's talking about it, but no one knows what's going to happen. So you don't know who's going to be hit and who's not going to be hit. And it's not a good time. It's not a great feeling necessarily.
Yes and no. I remember when my friends got hit in 2008, right when Lehman Brothers came crashing
Right.
down. And AIG was forced to sell off and bifurcate, and what was it, Merrill Lynch, Bank of America merger, and everything else. I mean, we talk about Barbarians at the Gate, but then you got Too Big to Fail, the other book that chronicles, the history of Wall Street, which, again, looking at the pictures, I knew that person. I met Ruth Porat. I know them. And so, that was a different era. And, I think by then I was like, thank God, because those that got laid off in 2008 were enjoying their severances, even though
They
they
were,
weren't.
there was the happy hour, the happy, I forget how much the check was, but there was like the happy hour had the name of the, it was like the, 1158, which was the amount of your unemployment check. It was like happy 1158 happy hour, like
And they were the ones that were part of the financial crisis. So it's like, wait, no fair. So like by the time 4 years later roll around, it's a different world. But in the case of what UBS was going through at the time, there was this trader. They call him a rogue trader. His name was Kweke Adubo, I believe is his last name in the UK. And UBS had just gone through this huge round of layoffs to like try to save $2 billion of, because they were in some financial difficulty. And then this guy, this rogue trader, is young, runner, younger than me, posts some $2.5 billion rogue trade. And then UBS had to go through again another round of layoffs. It's four rounds. I was the fifth at that point. So at that point, it was just like, all right, like this place is falling apart. Like, just I'm out of here. And I took a year off to travel, and it was well needed, because getting my MBA part time while working full time for 2.5 years straight was pretty exhausting. And so it was nice to finally take a breath and kind of collect myself at that point.
All right, so you take a year off. Okay, so I was going to ask about the departure, like, because it's like you said that you like left the job and so on and so forth, and this was part of an industry-wide struggle and like a series of layoffs, and versus one day you walked in and were like, you know what, I'm out of here, very dramatically, which would be a different story, but also very good. All right, so you take a year off and you felt like you were there. Did you have fears and concerns at that time about taking time off, about doing anything? Like, what was your mindset at the moment?
The mindset was, I'm going to look for work while I enjoy my time traveling the world and going scuba diving and enjoying some of my quote free time. And it took time at the time. It took 13 months to land the new job. But that began a 10-year period of difficulty, because from 2012 to 2022, I had lost my job three times. I had been laid off three times. And one time I was out of work for 2.5 years straight. So that second era of this career, you asked me what my favorite job was. That was a lot of fun back then at UBS. But then the next 10 years to now, to 2022, when I finally said, I'm out of here, I quit it all, was 10 years of hardship. It was a lot of ups and downs, very difficult.
And so when we talked about 15-year-old you, you actually said that your vision of this job was rooted in stability. Like, this was like, if I follow this path, if I do science and math, if I get the engineering degree and the MBA, that's going to set me up for stability. But that this 10 years was not stable and didn't feel good.
It did
Now
not. It
I'm
was very
seeing
difficult.
that. Now I'm seeing the pattern. All right, so very good. So you were able to get jobs, but then it was, it was, you were losing jobs. It didn't feel very good. And then it sounds like there's a moment where you walked into the office and you were like, "Okay, I'm out. It's all done. See you later."
Exactly.
Okay, so you
Exactly.
had both parts of that story. It's like once was a layoff, and once was a, I'm out. Goodbye.
It
Thanks for the
was a one,
coffee.
two, three layoffs. And then the fourth time was peace out. I'm out.
Okay.
I'm walking around without shoes now.
All right, very good. So what you did then is, so you're still in the city at that point. You're living in the city and working in finance. And so you, what's the decision you make? You were like, I'm out, I'm not doing this anymore. What did you decide to do?
Didn't have a plan.
Oh, you did
As
not have
much
a
as
plan.
no, as much as
You were
I'm
just
a
like, see you
planner,
later, I'm out. I don't have a
I hit a
plan.
breaking point. I hit a breaking point. And the, what is Mike Tyson said? Everything's great. You have a plan until you get
Everybody
punched in
has a
the
plan until you get punched in the
face.
face. That's the very fa that's I love using that quote in things that are not at all related to boxing, because it is so funny. It's like everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face, because it's so easy to understand. I can't actually even imagine getting punched in the face, to tell you the truth, especially by Mike Tyson in his prime. That must have been super scary. Honestly, that must have been terrifying.
Well, now he's into psychedelics like me, which is part of the story why he's
There
doing
you
it. So
go. There
good.
you go. That's why I predated like Mike Tyson in his prime. Like he was like when he was like King of the Mountain, I think he would have been a very ferocious opponent. He's a different, you know, boxers age like anybody else. All right. So you didn't have a plan. But what have you done? Like, so you didn't have a plan. What was the, let me back up. What was, you were fed up and you were finished. Can you put three words to describe why you decided to just exit stage left and call it quits on the career path of 20 years?
Well, it was mental anguish. It was breaking point. It was I can't take this anymore.
Okay.
There's so much. There's yada yada yada. Right, Seinfeld. Like it went from here, yada yada, and now I'm here. There's a lot
Yeah.
there, and 2020 into 2022.
Okay.
Being by yourself, working remotely, trying to continue this stressful life, holding down a mortgage by myself. Just toxic work environments is really what it is. And I
Okay.
could talk to you about toxic work environments. There's
I believe you. Okay,
plenty
so
of examples of that.
so what is the year when you walk in and say, see you later?
January 2022.
2022. So you made it all the way through lockdown, living in the city, all of those things. That was a really that it's it, I know that people are tired of talking about it and everybody wants to put it in the rearview mirror, but the legacy of that time and the impact of the decisions and the things we have had to live through does is still living on. It touches, it's really interesting when I talk to people about pivot points, how many of them include like a shift at that point. Do you immediately leave the city?
No, I couldn't. I owned my apartment.
Okay.
So for me, it was so I have a trilogy series coming out, and book one that's about to get published at the end of this year talks about the time between 2019 into 2020. And this second book that I'll be writing is this kind of surrender point, and then
Okay.
onward is 23 onward. But
So, and are these
I
novels or is this like a memoir
No,
series?
it's my trip. It's 100% real.
Okay, all right.
Travel adventure memories, and we'll get into what's there. But why I bring that up is because 2022 January, I quit. I took 3 months leave of absence. I quit in my head, but I didn't technically quit until I was finished that leave of absence. But I had been going on
So
adventures.
first, right. So first you added up all of your benefits and you were like, let me dial it, let me meet with HR and figure out how much I have accrued that I can take. And you're like, all right, so I'm gonna take some time and then I'm gonna quit.
No, I took a leave of absence because
Okay.
I had a mental breakdown.
Oh, so opposite of the intention.
I
You were like, I cannot make it. I'm not
can't do that.
available.
I'm burnt out. I hit a breaking point. I was emotionally just no. And I had to take
Okay.
a short-term leave of absence as a health.
Short-term
My
mental health leave of absence.
doctor signed off on it.
I believe you.
Yeah.
I had the wrong thing going on in my head. I thought in my mind this was playing out. You had hit it and you were like, you walked in, you were like, no, thank you, and walked away. But that's not it. You hit a boiling point and you couldn't do it anymore. And it was forced by the
Emotional,
situation.
my emotion. It was emotional turmoil. What the straw on the camel back was, I was on a conference call with senior leadership, and the senior leader insulted me on the call, and I was just dumbstruck again, back to toxic work environments, and I was like, "That's it, I fucking quit." But I was cry having a meltdown. I was crying, hyperventilating after I got off that Zoom call in my kitchen,
Yeah.
and I said, "That's it, I'm writing a book, I'm out of here." And then I took 10 days off. I was shaking. For 10 days. I went
Right.
to the doctor. She's like, "You got anxiety. I've never seen your blood pressure this high before, ever." I'll write how much time you need. I'll write the permission slip. And I said, "I don't know." They gave me 3 months short-term leave of absence. She goes, "All right, you got it." And I was like, "Great." So then I was like, I knew in my heart I was quitting. So I decided to go on some adventures first. And
Okay,
then when I
so
came back, I then put the resignation in. And then I decided to sell the apartment only 6 months after that. So it took a long time to get to start the wheels to get out of New York.
So yeah, and you were so your whole body was overwhelmed. You were shaking, your physical markers were off the chart. Your doctor tells you they've never seen their blood pressure at your blood pressure that high. You take 12 weeks and you go on some adventures. What were the adventures you did in the if you remember then?
Oh, plenty. This will be book two. So the first thing I did was I got on a plane and went to California. And I
Okay.
did a solo drive up the Pacific Coast Highway. And then I went up to
Exactly what
Yosemite.
high blood pressure asks of you, by the way. That's terrifying. Are you kidding me?
Not compared to taking an electric scooter in New York City like I used to do. Are you
Fair
kidding
enough. But like,
me?
there are parts of that Pacific Coast Highway where it's like the ocean is like right there, and it's like, ah, all right, very good.
Yeah, riding a scooter with trucks and, everything else in the city, that's a
Fair
little bit
enough.
scarier. So, no, but what I did was I went to Yosemite and then I joined a women's retreat in the what is it? The Redwood Forest up in Felton, California. And it was
Very nice.
beautiful. It was reclaiming femininity because, I'm basically working in male-dominated industries my entire life, and
Yeah.
with the most intense of sort of experiences, and you almost have to be like a like the men, right, to kind of get through it and persevere. So I didn't know what my femininity was. I was a tough. I got a tough shell on me. I basically lived and breathed New York City my entire life. So that's where it was like the beginnings of a call of softening and kind of reconnecting. And then after California, what did I do? I did ayahuasca again. I did ayahuasca the first time, which we'll talk about in my first book, In the Rainforest, in 2020. But I did it again. And then I went to Teotihuacan in Mexico, the pyramids, with the Ruiz brothers. Their father wrote the Four Agreements, Don
Oh, okay, yes.
Ruiz.
All right, yes. I would
So
not have
Don
recognized the
Jose.
name until you said that, but okay, yes. Famous
Yeah,
book.
Don Jose and Don Miguel Jr. run this retreat in Teotihuacan by the pyramids outside Mexico City. So I did that, connected with those wisdom keepers and, mysteries and the secrets of the universe. I love megalithic structures as part of the many years and 43 countries I've traveled throughout my life so far. And then after that, I quit. I came back, I quit. And then I went on another adventure for about a month because I thought I may have wanted to move to Colorado. So I went from Denver and then I went up to the Rocky Mountains, and I have a friend in North Dakota who's a Native American, so I went to go visit him, and we went and blessed my Native American pipe, and we
Okay.
did a lot of spirit walking where we connected with the land in Bear Butte and Sturgis, and then out to Devil's Tower in Wyoming. I watched him channel the lightning, which was amazing.
Wow.
And then after that, I joined the women again, same women's retreat in Crestone, Colorado, where we worked with the wolves. So I was there out in the most, I think it's like the top 10 darkest skies you'll find in the world in Crestone, with the sand dunes and everything else. And I was connecting with the wolves, the call of the wild. And then I came back to New York and I'm like, all right, I got to put the apartment up for sale. But 2022, September, I put it for sale. I didn't sell it till September 2024.
All
So
right,
there's
so it was on
another
the market for
story already
2 years.
there.
So
Well, New
was the
York's a different
apartment just
place.
empty while you were traveling, or did you sublet it or like rent it out for
No,
a
no
little bit?
subletting. I have a, it's a co-op and there's a board and there's no subletting.
Not
It's
allowed.
very
Okay.
strict,
So you
strict
were
rules.
really on a deep searching exploration. You were like going to places, you were doing experiences, you were meeting with advisors and people who have opinions about how to find yourself. That is very, very interesting. Okay, so you sell the apartment, you finally get to Connecticut. How would you say, okay, so thinking of your life around 2018 and thinking of your life today as a you live in a different place, you do a completely different thing. How would you describe the differences in you and your life?
Big ones. So 2018, I'm riding my electric scooter. I have a backpack. My office at the time was in New Jersey, so I was taking the New Jersey Transit from Penn Station. It was a real long commute, 2.5 hours one way. Exhausting. Middle-aged, frumpy, still trying to push that boulder up a hill, figuring, what is it? Insanity. The definition is
Yeah,
trying to.
repeating.
Yeah, and then it's not working. So, this was the third layoff by then, 2019. But 2018, I was like, the whole kind of firm was kind of imploding. Things weren't going well. But I just was like middle-aged and frumpy. And now, 10 years later, I feel so much younger, so much more enlivened. Like, thank God I'm not that person anymore. I mean, she was trying so hard, but the world closed the door on her, and she said, all right, I'm gonna answer the call to adventure, which was the end of 2019, which begins my first book story.
So answering the call to adventure. All right, very good. Okay, so let's go right and tell people what you do these days and how they can connect with you online.
Right. So now I've invented myself as an international public speaker. I'm an
Okay.
author. I'm a travel storyteller, I'm a way shower, and I'm a founder. I'm the founder of the encouragement platform called Embolden Adventures.
And what does that do, Embolden Adventures? Do you lead people on adventures, or how does it work?
It's an encouragement platform. So it started out in 2016 as my travel blog, and
Okay.
now I'm trying to figure out like how do I level it up? And in this case, there's three pillars now. There's publishing,
Okay.
there's speaking, and then there's a Be Emboldened program that I'll be launching, which encourages and inspires personal, professional, and spiritual transformation.
Very nice. All right, very good. All right, so that's amazing. So you have some, how do you like for people to reach out to you? Do you like people to come to your website, or how do you like people to find you?
Yeah, the website's getting redone, so you
Okay.
can come now, emboldenadventures.com, Embolden Adventures, and you can sign up for my listserv. If you do, you will get the prologue to my book as a free
Okay.
gift. And yeah, so you could find me on social media, the various places Embolden Adventures can be found, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. You could send me an email, you could contact me through my contact form, and you'll just wait to see. This book's going to be amazing. I'm really proud of it.
Very cool. So you are accessible. All right. So all of those links will be in the show notes wherever you're listening to the podcast. They'll be on YouTube. If you are listening to the show, as many people do, while you were walking, while you were driving, any of those things, you can make sure you're subscribed to the Imperfect Adulting email list. And then I email it directly to your email box and you can just click on it. So that is very good. Sign up with Sarah and you get the prologue for her book. And by the time this comes out in July, there may be other things that she has going on. So those are very generous offers. And I really appreciate you sharing the story of what you went through because I think that. One of the reasons I like to tell these stories of change, right, is that when we are 19, 20, 22, 24, we are looking forward to our life and we have this impression that it will be very stable, that the things that we are doing are preparing us for this like very, very calm and stable life. And yet, shocker, folks, that is not usually what happens. We don't know where the pivots are coming and we don't know when the changes are coming. And so hearing stories of people who have survived, and you talk about it very calmly, but you went through two major financial crises while working in the finance world. So that's a lot, Sarah. Good for you. All right. Are you ready for the final three questions?
Yes,
These
let's
are going to be
go.
fun. So I didn't know about all the adventures you'd done when I wrote these. I write these fresh for every single interview I do. And now, like that, I love that this is the first thing that I came up with. All right. So have you ever jumped off of a cliff or a bridge into a body of water? And if not, why not?
I have.
I would say, now that I know more about you, I would figure that you absolutely had. Like, but I was when I wrote it, I was like, well, and if not, why not? All right, very good. But you have. All right, very good. So if you could win a complimentary shopping spree in any store all over the entire world, what would you choose? I have stumped her, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, the material three-dimensional matrix Sarah would have said someplace in New York, but now, like I said, I don't wear shoes anymore. I traded my Gucci pumps for flats.
So
I don't know.
no stores
I would,
below.
okay, how about because I'm planning a trip to South
There you go.
America, so can I use that as a as money toward the
Sure.
trip? Okay, that's it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Paying off
No,
my trip.
absolutely. Absolutely. So whatever your travel agency of choice, your bet, your like that, whatever, however you would buy all those things. Yes, absolutely. All right. I'm going to give you three choices and you choose your favorite. Binging a show on television, watching a movie in the theater, reading a book snuggled on the couch.
Binging a show on TV.
Very nice. Very nice. That's it. Sarah, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
My pleasure, Amy. It's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.